Technorama episode 514, Ice Cream Robots.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Ah, my cybernetic eye keeps twitching. I need to see an engineer.
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're returning, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, and joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm a little frightened.
What are you frightened of?
I took Harrison to go see It this weekend.
Oh, I thought you meant about his driver's permit.
That too. Yes, he did get it.
Everyone else is a little frightened at that point.
Yeah, I've notified everybody in Rock Hill via Facebook. You know, watch out.
Our little podcasting children are growing up.
I know, right? Yeah, I took him to go see It this weekend, which was rather interesting.
Yeah, and?
Yeah, you've seen the movie It before, right? The old one?
Yeah, I've seen the old one, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was pretty good. I liked it. My problem is I love science fiction stuff. And superhero stuff, I can suspend disbelief for that. But horror, I have a little more trouble trying to suspend disbelief for that.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why. I just can't really get scared. Now, sometimes every once in a while you get like a jump scare and it'll scare me, or it'll make it, kind of.
You are going to have to talk to or at least listen to Ben and Keith. They just got done with the Horrible Imaginings Film Festival in San Diego. Horror isn't all about making people jump out of their seats. There is some really creepy stuff out there that will give you goosebumps without that sudden jolt moment.
Well, I tell you, I think from what little bit I've seen of one of the Saw movies,
yeah,
it's the uncomfortable situation that they're put in that freaked me out a little bit more than a jump scare or something like that. But that, because I go, well, what would I do? I don't know. You know.
Well, and you've seen enough Doctor Who, right? The one with the scarecrow.
Yeah.
And how he banishes them all later and puts the one girl in that little bevel of the mirror.
Yeah, know? Right.
It's like, okay, that was creepy.
Yeah. Actually, watching the Weeping Angels was kind of freaky.
Yes. That one is sort of a jump moment. Like, they moved.
Yeah, because you turn around, or your vision with the camera, you turn around and all of a sudden you see, and it's got like teeth and stuff.
Right. All right.
We have
more to talk about than just that. I apologize to those of you who are expecting the stream on Sunday night. We were unable to get that up and running. We have technical issues. Tried and tried numerous times, but for whatever reason, we can't stream to Facebook. Don't know if it's a software update. Don't know what's going on. You know, we go away for a few weeks. Things get a little rusty. So we're going to take out the WD-40 and the steel wool and see if we can get this machine running again.
Yeah. Or use the can of air, try and... Yeah, scare it.
Rust-oleum. No, what's that rust-eating jelly stuff? Anyway.
Now, what you need to do is get another Mac and set it right beside it and make it jealous.
I should.
Start working.
I'm getting close to getting a new video machine. Waiting for those new iMac Pros with the Xeons in them. Hey,
We need just one more Patreon to make it happen.
One more? How about like 100 more Patreons to make that happen?
Yeah, well...
If you like this show and you want us to keep streaming and prevent issues like this, we would appreciate it. I will let you know later in the show. Listen up. But for now, we're going to get on with the history segment. Where is it? That's the letters. Here we go. On this day in history for September 13, 2017, this is the 256th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 109 days remaining in 2017. It was on this date in 1501 that Michelangelo begins his work on his statue of David.
How long did it take him to make that thing?
I didn't say.
Okay. That same date in 1609, Henry Hudson reaches the river that would later be named after him, the Hudson River.
Also on September 13, 1788, the Philadelphia Convention sets the date for the first presidential election in the United States. And New York City becomes
New
the
York
country's
City.
Temporary capital. There's a trivia question for you.
Yeah, no kidding. It was also on this date in 1850, the first ascent of the Bernina, the highest summit of the Eastern Alps.
Bernina,
that's it, yeah.
Also today in 1898, Hannibal Goodwin patents celluloid photographic film.
Oh, I thought you meant like, oh, that's cellulite. That's what I was thinking of.
No, don't patent cellulite.
It was also on this date in 1899 that Henry Bliss is the first person in the United States to be killed in an automobile accident. Not something I want to be remembered for.
Look out!
Hey, I could see it coming for a mile away.
I guess Henry Bliss just was on crutches already or something. He couldn't get out of the way. We don't know.
He didn't know what a car was. Ignorance is bliss.
Also today in 1906, the first flight of a fixed-wing aircraft in Europe.
It was 61 years ago today that the IBM 305 Ramac was introduced, the first commercial computer to use disk storage.
I am Ramac. You are in error.
I am Ramac. Get off my lawn.
September 13th, 1985, Super Mario Brothers is released in Japan for the NES, which starts the Super Mario series of platforming games. Happy birthday goes out on this date to American inventor, engineer, and businessman Oliver Evans, born on this date in 1755.
And I lost my page. There we go. Milton S. Hershey, American businessman, founded the Hershey Corporation. Was born on the same date in 1857.
Chocolate. Born September 13th, 1873, German mathematician and author Konstantin Teodori.
You had me the first time. German-Swiss explorer Wilhelm Filchner was born 140 years ago today. He's still looking around.
Filchner! Robot House! Born September 13th, 1866, English chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Robert Robinson.
American singer-songwriter and conductor Ray Charles was born on this date in 1918.
Georgia! Mel Torme, the American singer-songwriter and actor, was born 92 years ago today.
An American animator, director, producer, co-founder, Sullivan Bluth Studios and Fox Animation Studios, Don Bluth is 80 today. Wow. I love that guy. Wow.
He did American Tail and a bunch of other stuff, too.
Dragon Slayer.
Also turning 73 today is American singer-songwriter, bass player, and producer Peter Cetera. No relation to Et Cetera.
And an English actress and producer, Jacqueline Bisset, is 73 today.
Happy birthday to our listeners out there this week. September 14th is Andrew Peters, a.k.a. Pearl Hacker from the UK. Mary Brown, the wife of occasional guest of Technorama's Brian Brown, is on the 15th. Podcast friend Billy Flynn is on the 16th. On the 18th is Jeff Schultz, a.k.a. Gorbash. And another podcast friend, Viv Schubert, has her birthday on the 19th. But we won't say how old she is this year. You'll have to go to Facebook to find out.
I think it's 28 again.
And again. And again. Happy birthday to all of you. If you want to get on the birthday calendar, go to our wiki site. You can follow through the show notes or go to chuckchat.com/wiki and put your name on there. And that's the way it was on this day in history for September 13th, 2017. I think the band... No, I don't think I'm going to let them march for another minute and 15. We'll just fade them out.
There you go. Just fade them out. Get out of here. No, go.
Okay. You know what? never had that on that final closer on there.
Anyway, we mentioned Super Mario Brothers.
Yes.
You know, at Dragon Con, Charles Martinet was there. He's the voice of Mario in the games, and among others. But yeah, he's the voice of Mario in the games.
It's me, Mario.
I watched while you were napping. I was watching the
what I never. You mean like from 4 to 5 a.m. at Dragon Con?
Yeah, that was your regular sleep schedule. No, no, but I saw him on Dragon Con TV, and it was pretty cool. Little interview. He was very thankful for Nintendo letting him do things like Dragon Con, and he was talking about the voices of Luigi and all these other characters. Pretty cool.
I wonder if he does podcast IDs. Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to a Technorama.
Yeah, well, one of our Zoidbergs,
Paul.
Yeah, or I think Shannon. It's Paul. No, it's Paul. He had a picture with him, and one he said Zoidbergs. He was doing the voice.
That's not so funny. Yeah.
Well, he came around the table and they got a picture with him, and he was doing voices and stuff. So yeah, we should have gone. We didn't make it into the Hall of Fame.
We did not make it into the Walk of Fame at all. And, you know, we should probably do a quick wrap up of our Dragon Con antics for those who were not there.
Good point. Yes.
We had our live show with Clinton Alvord, Comedy Forecast and Technorama. That was our third, fourth year we've done that now as a duo. Worked out pretty well. People thought it was fun. We had a lot of audience participation. It's available on the Dragon Con podcast track page on Facebook. Is that where it is?
I shared it the live show video
right
on our Technorama page.
It was so, yeah. It was a little tricky because a lot of stuff took place on the screen, but you know, when you're playing, you know, Guess the Geek, and you didn't know that the last one was the Sarlacc
pit. Actually, wait, no spoilers, because see, somebody watching that doesn't see the screen,
right?
So they got to guess along with them.
Right, but we never tell them what it is.
Yeah, we do.
No, we didn't.
When they guess it right.
No, we didn't. Well, yeah, the two guessed it right, but Rob Reel didn't guess his, and we never told him. I realized that afterwards. I went, this is bad for the viewers at home.
Hey, we can just double it. It's the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah.
For those playing at home.
like whose line is it anyway?
Yeah.
But so that was a lot of fun. We had a great parade. We had two new characters. Well, we had two rerun characters.
Yeah. That's right.
We have a second fry. So Crazy Joe Fiore of Megapodtastic. Where's the desk bell?
Ding.
Oh, I faded out the music. I forgot to fade it back up. There. He gets a desk bell. Crazy Joe was driving Craig's truck, which meant that Craig got to march in the parade for the first time since we started.
No. I've done it before.
The first year when Anthony was driving.
Yeah, because I had the holophoner and I was marching.
That was the first year.
I was marching with it like a baton, you know.
And now we had two fries and two Zoidbergs. So Shannon joined us last year as a Zoidberg, and this year we had Paul join us as a Zoidberg. And we also had Kyle join us as a fry. So we could have one on each side of the parade. It was great.
Right.
And they were great. They were really getting into it, too. So,
now, Paul and Shannon, we had a little fun with them because right in front of where we were staging for the parade was a big city dump truck. So we lined up. There's a picture of me, which I put it on my profile, temporary profile picture. But there was a picture of them. Two Zoidbergs digging into the back of the garbage truck.
It was funny because Paul said one of his mom's favorite pictures is him as Zoidberg digging in a garbage can. I said,
if she loves the garbage can picture, she's really going to love the garbage truck.
Wait till you see the buffet. Yeah. But what I was trying to say was there is also a picture of me and Kyle as fries, and we're hanging off the side of the garbage truck.
And we're a couple orders of fries.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun, and we had Clinton there, Scruffy, and Gary was our temporary Santa. We had Daniel join us again as Pink Bender. Who else do we have? We have promises from people to join us next year.
Gary's looking into Zap.
Gary was Zap. I met a woman in one of the science tracks who was dressed as Leela and invited her to join us.
Hey, during the parade, I saw a dude dressed as Leela, and I said, hey, you should be in the parade with us.
Yeah, got a couple of extra wristbands.
Oh, yeah.
So hopefully we'll continue to grow this group organically, and we'll see what happens. If you are interested in going to Dragon Con and being part of this crazy parade that we do at the end of the it's a lot of fun. Let us know. Reach out. Send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. We'd love to hear from you. What else did we do? We had Science Track. We had Sulfur X. We had a lot of the usual stuff. But
there was beer and liquor.
Oh, man. My liver is still recovering, and it's a week later.
Oh, wait. The awkward hug sign.
We had tried so much fun something with that. New. It's the same piece of cardboard I've been using for 3 years. It's the fourth year we've been doing the awkward hugs. I think my daughter Julie got us started on this, so I blame her.
Yeah.
We had...
I was going to say, for those who don't know, do you want to explain what it was?
Yes. So if you go to a con, you may see people wearing a t-shirt or holding a sign that says free hugs. And people come up and hug you, and it's a very nice thing. Well...
Or free shrugs. You've also seen that.
Yeah, free shrug. Meh. We came up with the idea of free awkward hugs. And just watching people walk by and read that sign and get a smile on their face brings joy to my heart. It really does. But the later you get into the night, the more alcohol people have consumed, and the more dangerous this becomes.
Yes.
they may, in fact, tackle you or pick you up or who knows. It's even fun to watch people. We like to find a spot that has good traffic. A bottom of an escalator, not in the way, but clear enough that they can see you coming from far away, or the entrance or the exit to a hotel, some place where there's a good volume of traffic and people are just going about their business, and we'll hold up that sign that says free awkward hugs. And I did this for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I was laughing so hard I had a headache.
Right.
And there wasn't enough alcohol to drown that headache away. I said, I got to take a break. So it was like tag team wrestling. I'd hand off the sign to Craig, and Craig would take his shift for 10, 15 minutes. Then he'd hand it off to Crazy Joe, and Crazy Joe would. And it was a lot of fun because now we had rotations to the free awkward hugs.
Well, yeah. And when I was holding up the sign, I was trying to entice people to come over. So, like,
we had marketing. Like, well, while Craig was holding it, Joe and I would be going, hey, free awkward hugs over here. And people would go, I don't know. And then we'd talk them into it.
Well, some people walk by and trying to ignore me. And I would walk with them and kind of hold the sign. Right. I would track them, you know. And some people were like, no, I'm not having any part of this. I'm like, whatever. But I would, I was trying to get, sometimes I get couples to come up. And
well, there were lots of free awkward group hugs going on, too.
Yes, there was. And as you mentioned a moment ago, somebody did try to tackle me or grab me and ran with me. It took me across the room. I'm like, what is he doing? I didn't even know what he looked like. I couldn't tell you what he looked like.
Yeah, some people would just come up and grab you from behind. There were a few that if there weren't pictures, I wouldn't know who they were.
Yeah. So that was, immensely fun. And I want to do it again because it was just so much fun.
It's one thing to watch. It's another thing to participate.
Yeah, and sometimes I was hugging somebody, and I would go to let go, and go, and I'd hug again, and a couple people made it awkward for me.
Yes.
I'm like, you know, this is supposed to be awkward for you, not me.
We are the professionals here.
That's right. And who knew you could have so much fun with a stupid piece of cardboard?
That's right. Keep it going. I don't believe I'm allowed to use that at Phoenix Comic Con, so it will live on at Dragon Con.
Oh, you're not allowed?
No. Why? No signs like that.
The con won't let you?
It specifically says in the rules, no free hug signs.
Yeah, I still think you should make it awkward by making a sandwich sign. Like
that just sounds like it's going to hurt. Somebody's going to get hurt with that.
Yeah. How awkward can you get, man? That's
No. Plus, you'd have to put another thing in your truck.
I know, right? I might have to upgrade the truck.
and it's not one size fits all. So it'd be really big on you, but look like miniature on Joe.
Everything looks miniature on Joe.
All right, that's our Dragon Con news. We had a really good time. Sad to see it end once again, but already counting down the days till next year.
Hey, the thing about Dragon Con, I get excited to go, and then when Monday rolls around, I'm kind of like, I'm ready. I'm done.
Oh, we didn't mention the Trek trivia game.
Oh, yeah.
There is a Star Trek track, and we're going to see if we can get our new show, the topic is Trek, to be part of that track next year. Or maybe we'll cross the podcast track. They're right across the hallway from each other, the Trek track and the podcasting track. And surprise, surprise, it wasn't that hard to find, and we had good attendance, even though we were in the basement of the Hilton this year. But we were in the Star Trek track, and they were playing a trivia game. They'd play a little video clip, and they'd say, you know, who starred in this, who did that, who directed this episode. And it was amazing how deep some people's knowledge of Star Trek goes.
Oh, man.
Like, you know, they're a walking encyclopedia. I don't remember who directed every single episode. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, see, I thought, I was like, okay, you know, I know I'm not the most knowledgeable person, but I'm pretty knowledgeable when it comes to Star Trek. And then after watching them for a few minutes, I'm like, oh, no, I know nothing.
Well, luckily, he even said in the beginning, he said, there's going to be some questions where nobody in the room is going to know but that one guy, and they're going to have their moment. Well, I had that moment. I was that guy for a little while, because he started off asking questions about Michael Dorn, and he said, well, Michael Dorn also voiced the cartoon character of which character on I Am Weasel? And I raised my hand, and I said he voiced I Am Weasel. He said, what was the name of the other major character on that show? And I raised my hand again. He said, I.R. Baboon. It's like, are we not on Star Trek questions anymore? Because I'm happy to keep going. And he said, there's the guy. He found his moment. I think the funniest one was when they showed the episode where Geordi's, someone hacked Geordi's visor and he was supposed to kill some Klingons. He's walking around with a phaser. And they stop the scene on the TV and they say, what's wrong with Geordi? And before I realized what came out of my mouth, I said, he can't see! and the whole room was laughing, and I said it so fast, I thought, what are they laughing at?
Yes, that was funny.
Did I say that out loud?
Yeah, it was funny because around you, people started laughing, and it went forward. It was like almost like a wave
of ridiculousness,
like a compression wave.
I'm glad it worked.
Hey, I did know something that it took everybody a moment to, but he didn't call on me. I was the first one. It was the prefix code for the Reliant. I knew it. I know that number.
867-5309.
That's exactly not it. But what was funny was that they somehow it came up, and I raised my hand.
Yeah.
And then he called somebody in the front row. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Well, it's funny because Gary and Joe were saying the same thing. They were raising their hand but not getting called. So the guy, the host of the show says, come on forward. And from then on, they never raised their hand or they never got called again. I don't know what, there wasn't any benefit to that move.
They blanked.
Stage fright. Yeah, like Joe would get stage fright.
What would you like for Christmas, little boy? Football? Yeah. All right.
Football? Wake up, stupid. All right, wrong show. We're going on with the news.
Good news, everyone.
How many times I say that in the parade?
way too many.
Yeah. Well, a Shropshire farm, that's over in the UK, has completed their harvest with nothing but robots.
Robots.
Researchers in Shropshire, England, have managed to sow and harvest a field of barley using nothing but robots. Many aspects of farming have now been automated, but rarely is the entire process, planting, tending, monitoring, and harvesting, completed without someone stepping foot inside the field. The Hands-Free Hectare project.
Raise your hands.
hands like across my field.
Look, Ma, no harvest.
The Hands Free Hectare Project was set up last October by a team of Harper Adams University. With 200,000 pounds in government funding, they modified a tractor and combine harvester with cameras, lasers, and GPS systems. Drones and a robot scout, which could scoop up and carry soil samples, helped the group monitor the field from afar. Kit Franklin, the project's leader and an agricultural engineer, freely admits that this was, quote, the most expensive hectare of barley ever. So why bother? Well, commercial farms and agriculture businesses tend to use large, heavy machinery. These vehicles are efficient, but have a damaging effect on the soil and subsequent crops. Quote, automation is the future of farming, but we're at a stage where farm machinery has got to unsustainable sizes. Franklin told the Times he believes smaller, smarter vehicles are the future, as they can work with greater precision and reduce harmful soil compaction. The Hands-Free Hectare Project, while successful, was not without its challenges. The tractor failed to keep a straight line in the field, which meant some of the crops were sown in crooked strips. After drilling and rolling the crop, the team also struggled to quickly repurpose their tractor for spraying. Sadly, we missed that target, but we have since managed to get our T1 and T2 fungicides, including a herbicide, to help tackle some grass weeds, and we were seeing, and micronutrients to aid the crop growth. Kieran Walsh, the team's agronomist, explains, monitoring a field from a video feed, she says, is harder than being out there and looking yourself. Wow. Let's watch the videotape of the barley grow.
Barley grow. That looks riveting.
Is it barley? What were they growing? They were growing, barley. No.
I wonder if they could use something like wire. You know, maybe not necessarily...
wire?
In such a way where, if they laid out a grid so the machines could go down and follow the wire...
Well,
to stay in a straight line.
It would seem if you set up a series of reflectors, you could accomplish the same thing, right?
Reflectors, yep. Actually, reflectors would be better because you wouldn't run the risk of ruining it with the combine or running over the tractor or something. I don't know.
If you've got a laser on the combine, you know if you're not online and how far it is to stop before you run over the reflector, all that good stuff.
Yeah, surely it can go turn around and then find the next point and then move toward. Surely there's a better way to do that, but
there is a way, and don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, it seems pretty cool though.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back with some hacks and strange stories, a little bit of remember when, and some Media Corner stuff. Hang on.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with AstronomyCast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
Hi, I'm Bill Farmer. You may know me as the voice behind Goofy, Pluto, and many other characters.
Howdy there. This is your old pal, Mr. Haney, and you're listening to Technorama with, who are they with? Chuck and Craig.
And you may know me as the voice of Pluto and Goofy and a bunch of other characters I can't do for licensing concerns.
No. I think about that every time.
Here's one I can do. Yeah. That was fun. All right. Would you like to take this story about the Russian family who, let's just say they found themselves a new home, sort of.
Well, technically, they didn't come home. There was no home there.
A family of man.
Yeah. A family of migrant workers from Russia's region.
Yeah. Nizhny Novgorod.
Yeah, Novgorod. Anyway, region recently returned to their native village of Zavrod.
Zavrod? Wasn't he on Superman or something?
No, that's Zod. You're thinking of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Zavod Beeblebricks.
That's right. So after a month of work, they came home to find their house partially demolished and an asphalt road passing through their property. They, oh my gosh, come on. The Udalov family.
Udalov. No, that was in Robin Hood, the Disney movie. Udalali, golly, what a day. They must have had one a day.
Who do you love? Anyway, Udalov.
Who do you love? All right, you got me on that one. Let's keep going.
Okay.
The poor listeners, they're going, what is this story about?
I know. Well, let me try to tell you. Okay, so the family spent most of their time away from home working in the nearby city, but they always look forward to spending their short vacations at their quaint property in Zavrod. Unfortunately, they had no longer have a house to go back to after authorities took the liberty to tear down part of it in order to make room for an asphalt road. No one contacted them about the project. Speaking of hitchhikers, I'm starting to have flashbacks.
And there's a picture of them with a tent on the road.
I know, right? It looks like half the house right there. So they came back after a month to a partially demolished house, and their belongings spread on the side of the new road. Oh my God, traversing their yard. So Valeria Udalov and her husband recently made news headlines in Russia after placing wood barriers on the new road and blocking traffic, as a section in front of their house is technically their private property. They even camped out on a tent on the road since their old house looks ready to collapse at any minute. They vowed to keep blocking the road until authorities take responsibility and offer them compensation for the damage, damages they caused. I mean, this is terrible. I can't imagine coming home and there's like a bypass going through your house.
This is, hang on, there's a video here. I want to see if I can play any of this. Hopefully there's not an ad in here. Oh, where's the audio? I'll translate.
They had
a house here, and then the city planning commission decided to widen the road.
They said the plans were down in a cellar and on display.
They didn't get the memo. Now, when the Udo...
I came home, and suddenly there's asphalt where my bathroom used to be.
This is an outrage.
I can't believe it. It's a very nice road. Maybe someday they'll put stripes on it. Oh, I found my toothbrush. There's not much left of the house. In some sections, it looks like it's going to fall apart. Well, it already has. A bulldozer just came right through and took off half of my bedroom. I don't understand why they didn't send us a note or call us or anything. Then we asked Grandpa, what does he think?
The house looks like crap.
It's a very nice improvement. The house has been here for centuries. It's a log cabin.
All right.
Yeah.
Not going anywhere with that.
No. So, anyway, I that's terrible. I was saying when I have flashbacks, I keep thinking it's funny that we're talking about Zavod because that's, this is the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. That was kind of the premise of the kickoff the whole story.
Yeah. And also the ending.
Wait, nobody told me about this. Well, the plans were on display.
Right.
In the cabinet, in the basement.
Well, we have other good news for you in case you were wondering when. Can you put Hello Kitty tires on your car?
Oh, thank God. The
answer is now, because
it's about time.
What good are your Hello Kitty rhinestone seat covers and dashboard bobbleheads if you can't accentuate them with matching tires?
Hey, by the way, I want a car that's pink, like that color pink with the Hello Kitty on the hood.
I know somebody who would probably get these.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
I think you met him when you came and visited our church.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Nothing. You are not right. Not that I'm saying anything wrong with it. Sanrio and Nexen Tire have teamed up to produce Hello Kitty branded car tires. This is what they look like. We would have had pictures if we had a live stream up tonight. Nothing too exciting, but who cares? Anybody who buys these is just going to rub the design off by scraping curbs anyway. It's really, it looks like a tire, and on the white wall, it's got a little bow, Hello Kitty, some whiskers. It's otherwise, it looks like normal car tires.
It is the cutest tires you'll ever see.
But I'm sure they cost a princely sum.
Yeah, because, you know, they got a license to Hello Kitty.
You know what? We didn't even play the Hacks and Strange Stories thing, so...
Straight stories.
There you go. Let's go into the Remember When. In the Remember When segment, we have an 800-year-old scroll. This is not something just fun and old. We have actually, the high tech has solved the mystery of an 800-year-old scroll. 800 years ago, teenager Laurentius Lucutus of Borg.
Accidentally
killed a man in Italy. He then headed to a cave. We're not known for our name pronunciations on Technorama, if you can already guess that. We're just going to make it up as we go.
Why not?
Even Brian Dunaway was doing this on the live show at DragonCon. I thought that was very funny how he just sort of played along. He didn't even know what the premise was. He just sort of made it up as he went. Let's see. He accidentally killed a man in Italy. He then headed to a cave where he lived for 34 years, whipping himself to atone for his sins. Today, his story lives in the Vatican's secret archives on a piece of parchment covered in purple spots. This kind of damage is common on ancient parchment, but why? Why? What causes it? A team of Italian researchers interested in better understanding the ancient text decided to identify the microbes responsible for the splotching and applied brand new techniques in order to do so. The researchers probably couldn't have guessed some of the culprits. Quote, "I found marine microbes." Study author Luciana Migliore from Tor Vergata University in Rome, Italy, told Gizmodo. I'm going to use Italian when I say Gizmodo.
Wonderful.
Where did they come from? In a goat parchment? There has to have been writing 800 years ago? This was absolutely surprising.
Hey, you do sound like Mario a little bit.
The team began by taking already detached tiny squares of parchment, both from purple and unstained pieces of the scroll, isolating the DNA and sending it to a lab in Texas for processing. On analyzing the sequences, they found 957 kinds of bacteria on the purple spots and 407 kinds of bacteria on the undamaged spots, with only 140 of the 1224 total species shared between the two. The most common bacteria on the purple spots, surprisingly, were, good lord, Gammoproteobacteria. We'll go with that. Break it down in three words. Mostly the salt-loving ocean kind, according to the paper published in Today Journal Scientific Reports. So, how did the splotches form? This parchment came from a goat skin, usually preserved in salt brines. The brine could have acted as a culture for the purple microbes and begin sprouting. After salting, the parchment was stretched, shaved, and scraped, leaving a salty outside and less salty inside. The collagen in the parchment would serve as the home for bacteria colonies. The scrolls then could have moved into monasteries. After they got kicked out of what? Their apartments?
Right, yes.
The author's right. Dunk, dunk, dunk. Microbes, can we live here in the monastery?
Hello. Housekeeping.
The scrolls, where they would have been exposed to moisture and change in temperatures. Here, the purple bacteria would have flourished. So, they did some testing on this stuff and actually found out, nobody knew what the little purple spots were for or what they were from. And now they know the rest of the story. So,
he accidentally killed a man in Italy.
Not one of our more interesting stories, I'll admit.
Wait a minute. So, he killed him accidentally.
800 years ago. Yeah.
And then he headed to a cave where he lived for 34 years.
Flogging
himself. Whipping himself.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
For his atonement. Because that's just what you did 800 years ago.
Wow. Well, I figured as old as this thing is, I can imagine the stuff would come from, it could come from anywhere.
Well, they didn't know. Now they do. Where the purple splotches come from. All right, we want to give a shout out to our patrons.
Yay!
Because they really make this show sustainable.
And for each patron, we get you get a free set of Hello Kitty tires.
No, you don't get the Hello Kitty tires. But we do have something creative coming to you this year on Christmas for the holiday season. Last year, we sent our patrons books. This year, people such as Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Leon, John Noble, Amy Bowen, Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, which would be Grandpa Choco, Steve Therian, and Kyle Nishioka can
get more books.
Keep their eyes on their mailbox for something different this year. And if you want to do that, it's not too late to join. You can go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and become a patron for as little as a dollar a show. You know what the cool thing about Patreon is? If we're not making shows, you're not paying for it. So, like August, probably it might only cost you a whole buck. We were very busy in August doing other stuff.
And the value of that dollar, that's another question. But, hey, it would only cost you a dollar.
But we also make sure that they get a special feed with special content that only they get. So that's pretty cool. And if I remember right, hang on, I think Keith gave me something for this. Let's stop that. He gave me this one. I think this is where he used it, or maybe it was the Geek Library. Let's find out.
If you want to be one of our patrons, go over to patreon.com/technoramapodcast and sign up now.
Hey, man, I was recording that.
Oh, sorry.
Not going to do it again.
Yeah.
We'll try again next week. We'd love to have you on there. Let's do the Media Corner thing.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
This is not the latest news you've ever heard from this place, but it is the ongoing story. We thought we'd bring you an update from this past week. Disney CEO Bob Iger announced on Thursday that his company will pull the full catalog of films from the Star Wars franchise and Marvel Universe from Netflix after 2019. It is confirmed. Sadly.
Yep.
Last month, Disney announced it would be pulling a number of Disney titles from the Netflix catalog, but left the door open to keeping Star Wars franchise and the Marvel films. The door has since slammed shut, quote, choosing instead the movies like Iron Man, Captain America, and forthcoming Star Wars Episode 9 as a draw to a new Disney-owned streaming service, reports Ars Technica. From the report, it's not clear. What?
Nothing going.
Can I read This is Mario 2?
No.
No fun. Let me increase the font size. It's a little tiny for my old eyes. It's not clear exactly which films are affected by Iger's announcement. A Netflix spokesperson told The Verge last month that we continue to do business with the Walt Disney Company on many fronts, including our ongoing deal with Marvel TV. That refers to a collaboration between Disney and Netflix to produce several live-action television series based on lesser-known Marvel characters Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage. Some of those series are still being actively developed. It's a high-risk gamble for Disney. It makes sense for Disney to bring the best-known franchises back under its own roof to give Disney's streaming service the best possible chance of success. But Disney is leaving a lot of money on the table by not doing a deal with Netflix or one of its competitors. It could be an expensive mistake if the Disney streaming service doesn't get traction.
Well, I have a feeling that, I mean, Disney has enough properties that they can probably make something worthwhile. But for me, I have been wanting to be, I have been a cable cutter for a long time.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, things are swinging my way. Okay, we got cable cutter. Yeah, we got a la carte services. Wait a minute, we got too many. Oh my God, they're splitting up. Now the pendulum has gone way too far away. And now I've got Hulu, Netflix, Amazon Prime,
CBS,
CBS.
Access.
Oh, and let's throw Disney in there now. Come on. You know, really?
But think of the things you're not buying. Does that make it any better? If you add that up, let's say you're getting just Amazon, or excuse me, if you're just getting Netflix streaming only for two viewers, what is that, $8.99 now? Excuse me.
Yeah, that's about right.
$10 a month.
Yeah.
Okay. That's 10 bucks a month. CBS All Access, was that $8 a month?
It depends. If you get it's less, a little bit less than that, but you can pay for no commercials.
Okay.
It's kind of like Hulu.
We'll round up. $8 a month. What are you paying for Hulu a month?
I'm paying the no commercial fee, which is like 12.
Okay, 12. So now we're up to $30 a month.
Mm-hmm.
What else did you say? Amazon?
Well, Amazon Prime, but I think it's figured a little differently because you get other benefits as well as
you do. And there is a separate Amazon Video, just like there's a separate Amazon Music. They don't put all of their content out there as
right.
part of Amazon Prime. I learned that when I started looking for music.
Yeah.
So we'll just go with the $100 a year. So divide that up. We'll say about another, make the math easy. $8 a month.
Or $8. Yeah.
38. What else are you paying for?
That's it.
Okay. So there's four. $38 a month. Is that what I said? Something like
that's
that.
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's way better than your cable bill was.
Oh, yeah. I agree. It's just like,
you could still stick four or five more of those. I mean, maybe not four or five, two or three more services in there without breaking the bank and getting the content you want.
Mm-hmm.
So ahead.
The point is, I don't want to go too crazy, but yeah, I mean, I could probably afford another one, but you know, I don't know. It's just like, again, I would rather have two, maybe three places to go to all my content. Now I got to get it spread up across.
And mileage may vary. There are people that have HBO Go because they want to see Game of Thrones, so they subscribe to that. You know, there are other subscription fees you can put on there, but it's still far cheaper than the, I think our cable bill, it was hard to tell because it was cable, phone, and internet all bundled into one for over $200 with a couple of DVR fees in there. But I would say our cable bill when we had one back in Wisconsin was $100 to $120 a month.
Mm-hmm.
So that didn't make sense to me either.
No. So, I mean, it's working all right. The only problem I have also is that, you know, sometimes you go, hey, I want to watch this movie. Is it available on one of my services? You go, how do you search for it? Well, fortunately, I mean, there's no real good universal search across all these, except for Roku is about as close as you're going to get. You know, if I do a search on the Roku, it will search across a lot of those services.
In some ways, it actually makes it easier. Well, maybe not. Maybe, but if you know it's a Disney property, if it's Marvel or Disney or Lucasfilms, you'd know where to find it, right?
Yeah. Well, some things. But look, if I go, hey, I want to watch, so-and-so from 1980, whatever.
Yes.
And you go, okay, is it available on one of my
right.
Now, here's something cool. Now, if I search for it on the Roku, it does a universal search. If I actually search for it on Google, it'll tell you whether it's available for rent or watch. You know, so if it says, it may say Netflix or it may say Hulu, so I know that I can go watch them on there. So Google can also help you a little bit of search.
I get it. I don't have a Roku. But I get it. I think my sister does.
Well, what I'm saying is you can use Google.
Yes.
You search for it and it shows the movie on the right-hand side.
Oh, rats, I forgot something. You just reminded me of something that T and I were brainstorming yesterday and I missed something. Speaking of Lucas, we have one more story to do. Well, no, you threw one in there. Okay. In 1977, George Lucas said he wanted to direct the last Star Wars movie. Yeah, when will that be?
I think he's had his last chance.
With Colin Trevorrow no longer directing Star Wars Episode 9, everyone has begun speculating like crazy about who could take over. J.J. Abrams, Ava DuVernay, Rian Johnson. I apologize if I can't pronounce these names right. It's the way this show goes. Well, one pretty dominant director called it 40 years ago, George Lucas. In 1977, a few months after the Star Wars was released and became a massive hit, Lucas spoke to Rolling Stone magazine and said the following: I think the sequels will be much, much better. Okay, after the first one he said that, right? Mm-hmm. What I want to do is direct the last
the prequels
sequel.
Will be much, much better.
Yeah, I had to put that in context. I could do the first one and the last one and let everyone else do the ones in between. How's that working out for you, George?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in 1977, he was likely referring to what would become 83's Return of the Jedi. Oh, yeah, so I'll do episode 4 and 6, and someone can else do 5. That's really sharing the pie. He was referring to Jedi, a film that could have been directed, but he didn't. He did, however, make 3 more Star Wars movies after that, though he's since said he's all but retired from directing these kinds of movies and hasn't really been a fan of what's happened. Wow, even he's not a fan. That's pretty sad. So we're mostly just pointing out a little fun coincidence, but we know he still cares. He talks to Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy about the franchise, so maybe he'd make an exception to put the final period on the Skywalker saga.
No,
I doubt it, but hey, wouldn't it be fun? On the other hand, there's no way Star Wars Episode 9 is going to be, quote, the last sequel, unquote. Just the last sequel for now. So it's probably best to just let things move along as they are.
Look, I have a lot of love for George Lucas. I think he's done some good stuff. But he's a story guy, not a director. At least anymore. Let me back up. He is a director, but the problem is, wait, I had it wrong. He's actually not a writer. I think he's more of a story guy and a director. But when he tried to do all of those things is when the prequels fell apart, and they tried to do too much technical with the blue screen, and everything was kind of wooden. So I don't know. I don't see him directing the last one.
I hate sand.
Yeah, it gets all up in my script. So.
All right, before we get out of here, you watched The Orville tonight.
No, I'm about to.
Oh,
I
you're
just
about
to.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, it came on
seeing,
earlier.
Yeah, it did. I've been seeing mixed reviews on Facebook.
Well, here's the deal. All right. I've seen mixed reviews. And, you know, I have that superpower where I can appreciate things that other people don't. So I'm okay with that.
That's a superpower? Okay.
It's mine. Okay. I'll take it. But I wanted to tell you, JT, who's in the middle of Irma right now, he wrote
Hurricane. Let's clarify. He's in the middle of Hurricane Irma.
I was going to let that go because I messed up. Anyway, so yes, he earlier Clinton said he watched it, and JT said, "Oh, my DVR didn't pick it up," and so I just happened to go to Fox.com and I saw it was already available to watch, so I posted on there, "Hey, you can watch it." So apparently, he watched it between that time and us recording Technorama. Anyway, he said it is Star Trek written by Disney Channel writers, but for adults. Meh. That's what he said.
Okay.
He said, and he also said, you can use that. Oh, he means the quote. So I don't know. I
think there were a lot of expectations, and people's expectations weren't met. It's its own show.
Well, I think all the ingredients are there.
Yeah.
You know, I like Seth MacFarlane. I think they probably need to back off some of his humor that he has, like on Family Guy and stuff, a little bit, just a little bit. And mix it with space, I think it could be good. Now, I will point out, and we had this discussion on Facebook, I don't know if you were privy to it, but hey, Star Trek The Next Generation wasn't great when it started either.
That's right, because there were a lot of expectations, and a lot of expectations weren't met. It's its own show.
Yeah, it started off, well, I say that it didn't get really good until the collars came up. Yeah, but but the first 2 seasons, there were some good things, and I enjoyed it, but yeah, it got really good right at season 3.
I'm going to obviously try to catch it before we do our next episode of The Topic is Trek. Ding. And
yeah, because we mentioned
we'll discuss it there.
Yeah, we mentioned it on there already, so yeah, we need to follow up on it. I'm going to watch it after we're done recording here. I told JT, I said, I would watch it, but I got to record this stupid podcast.
Stupid podcast.
So, hey, if you watched it, let us know what you think. We'd be curious on your opinion.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
That was a reviewer from Sandusky, Ohio, viewing the Orville.
All right, our question of the week before we take off is, how much of your body would you cybernetically enhance if you could? That's a very good question.
Hey, and let's throw this out there, too. Hey, if and offer what parts you would enhance.
Careful. This is a G-rated show. At least we try to keep it that way.
Yeah, we're watching you, JT and Irma.
Craig thinks hurricane disasters are funny.
No, I don't. Right, next time we know several people there.
Let's get out of here. Yeah, all the best to everybody who is struggling. We hope we at least added a little levity to your week as you're recovering or going through hurricane tragedies. You are in our thoughts and prayers.
Absolutely.
If you want to get in touch with us, if you can get in touch with us, 707-530-CHAT. That's 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. Otherwise, go to our website, find all the other links. Chuckchat.com/technorama. Oof, been a while.
You know that one. You should know it.
I should know that one. I've been playing around on our other websites a lot lately.
Yeah.
We got a book and stuff coming out.
It's on podcasting for
Podcasting for Dummies is going to be out October 2nd. You can go to Amazon and pre-order if you want to do that. There.
Awesome.
Plug for the book. And look at PIY while you're there. Till next time, give us a binary high five.
101.
Right before we kill that, you know what? You're getting bonus content here, people, because I really, really should have played this promo during the show. Silly me. Podcastingfordummies.com. I'm going to go here. If you are a podcaster and listen to this, I would really appreciate this. Go to podcastingfordummies.com. On the menu, go to PIY 2017. Towards the bottom, it says, are you a podcaster? Go ahead and play one of these promos. And there's a short one and a long one. And I'm going to play you the long one, and then we will go bye for now. So thank you very much. Drop that right in there. Here we go. Mark your calendars and plan to attend PIY 2017. PIY is the Podcast It Yourself workshop, and it's happening in Phoenix, Arizona, October 28th, 2017. This interactive workshop is being held for people who want to start a podcast or want to learn more about podcasting from experienced and respected podcasters. Learn about software, hardware, accessories, best practices, and more. And of course, we've got prize drawings to make podcasters weak in the knees. The workshop coincides with the long-awaited release of Podcasting for Dummies 3rd Edition. Authors T. Morris and Chuck Tomasi will be at PIY to answer questions and sign books. Oh, and it also happens to be T's birthday, so come help him celebrate after the workshop is done. You do not want to miss this event. Spaces are limited. Go to podcastingfordummies.com and sign up for PIY 2017. It doesn't get any simpler than that. Podcastingfordummies.com and PIY 2017. Go. Now.